You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason. Do you enjoy hearing lonely idiots talking to each other? You're in luck.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
What episode is this? 145?
Yeah.
45, okay.
Oh my gosh, it's almost 150.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like the episode 100 was recent.
Yeah.
It apparently wasn't.
I know,
it was almost a year ago,
It was
actually.
Almost a year ago. It was, gosh. I know, man.
We're just saying stuff.
We're killing it. We're just flying through this stuff.
Man.
Yeah.
Years and years.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to cut out that little bit of realization there as it hits us, so I'll just roll into this, man. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 9th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 145. Man, 145.
It's crazy, huh?
It is crazy. That's a lot of episodes.
All of a sudden, we realized how close it was to 150, and that's just crazy. I mean, it really does feel like the 100th episode was not that long ago.
I know, and it feels like the distance between episode 1 and episode 50 was massive.
Right.
And then to get from 50 to 100 was just mind-boggling. And then to go from 100 to 150 has been like a blink of an eye.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird.
Yeah. And of course, we're not there yet, but we're darn close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After tonight's recording, we'll have 4 more episodes to record.
Yeah. So. Yeah, nuts. So, yeah.
How's Don't it going? Get excited, though. We're not doing anything special for 150.
Nope.
We only do that for the hundreds.
Right. And for the year ends.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that, too.
Well, right. But,
yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah.
We have a weird weather situation outside.
The world is covered in ice.
Yeah, it's so weird. We've had snow because it's been winter and it's Michigan. Lots of snow. And then I think it was on Monday. We all woke up and it was like blizzard conditions outside and we all drove to work in it and it was awful. And then, between like 9 a.m. and noon, it switched to rain and then, it got really cold and then it warmed up again.
Yeah.
And so we have this weird situation. Well, and then yesterday it warmed up. And so all the ice started to melt and then it got really cold again.
Right.
And so we have all this, these mounds of snow everywhere and that are just giant piles of white snow that have melted a little bit. So they're smoothed over and then they have like a quarter inch thick, coating of ice uniformly over everything.
Yeah.
So driving over here tonight, it was dusk and there's lights shining and stuff. And like, there are entire like yards and fields of just snow that are like mirrors. It's amazing.
And it's like perfect. Yeah.
It's perfect. Yeah.
The thing I can most liken it to is have you read the book Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut?
It's been a long time. I think I read
there's
it in high
Ice
school.
Nine in that, which is the thing you drop in the water and it just turns everything to ice. I feel like we've been like Ice Nined.
Yeah.
Like
for sure.
In Michigan.
Here. Like in Demolition Man.
They do that in Demolition Man?
Yeah. That's how they cryo-freeze the people. They do the little drop into the water and it freezes everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Demolition Man.
Right. It's like that except for freezing the entire world.
Well, yeah. Right. And I mean, Demolition Man, it could have gone there. I'm just saying. Maybe if there was a Demolition Man 2. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Demolitioner Man.
Yeah.
Demolition Manor.
Demolition Manor. Demolition Mankind. Oh.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, let's write
You're
that
welcome,
down. Write that down.
That.
Write that down. Yeah. So yeah, Ice Nine. That's groovy, man.
So
that's super groovy.
My English teacher once told me that the reason I should read books is because it would come up at parties and I'd sound smart. But this time it came up on a podcast.
Well, I believe that though.
Yeah,
I believe that.
She really told me. I said, "What benefit is this? Is this stupid class to me?" I think I actually probably said stupid class. Yeah. I was in high school. I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Well, you know, someday you're going to be at a cocktail party." And somebody's going to bring up something. You're going to be like, ha, 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 Of Mice and Men. I've surely read that book. Uh-huh. And I was like...
And be able to comment on it intelligently.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And she's not wrong. Like, mm-hmm. I'm impressed with that because my math teacher said, you're going to use algebra. And they were wrong.
Yeah. So, right. Right.
I mean, I work with math a lot. I still don't use algebra.
Nope. Never.
Ever.
Never in my life.
In fact, You one day emailed everyone at work and our staff a question and said, hey, I'm trying to do this algebra here and I can't figure out how to do it. And Taryn, our friend, responded, but no one else did.
Yeah. It was like one of those things where, like, this is the first time in 15 years, probably the first time since I got out of college that right. I've needed to solve for X.
Right.
And I was like, I just can't do it. And it was literally like, you know, divide this number by that number, and that's all it takes. And Taryn looked at me like I was a moron,
right?
Because I am,
yeah.
In that case, but in my defense, it's the first time I've ever needed to do any algebra,
right?
Since
right.
Call it 1999,
yeah,
yeah. Since the last time I had a math class in college,
yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah,
math. Ugh. So, anyways. You played anything fun recently?
Well, I playtested Smithereens.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, did you play anything fun?
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, so playtested, a quick and dirty playtest. My wife and I knocked it out. I threw together a prototype because I just needed to see it in action and give it a try, you know? Sometimes you know that it's not going to work, but you just need to try something to see what is right. how it functions.
You got
to
push cubes around, as
yeah.
they say.
Yeah, you just got to make something happen just so you know what to do next.
Right.
And it went pretty rough. So to recap for anybody who doesn't remember, the idea is that you're building an airship. You start the game out with a few rounds of drafting where you're right. choosing parts to make an airship. Then as you play the game, your airship is slowly falling apart. Whoever is last man standing is the winner. Okay. So, but as I was explaining to Christine how to play the game, I was having her, right, instead of doing drafting, I was having her just pick ship components as she was going. While explaining what they were. And so naturally she picked this thing that does the most damage and this thing that has the most defense and this thing that gives her the most cards. And I'm not thinking about this, you know, I'm just thinking about making sure she comprehends the way the rules work. And also thinking myself about, you know, is it making sense as I'm explaining it?
Right.
Is this going to work together? And so we got basically the first round of the game, she stomped me hard and I never recovered. But it's because she had all the strongest right. things.
Which is how that should work. I mean, it's a drafting game. So, like, if somebody can yeah. draft those strongest things, well, in a two-player game, that's going to mm-hmm. be a big problem. But in a three-player game or mm-hmm. more, if one person drafts the best things and everyone realizes that, mm-hmm. guess what? They just painted a huge target right on them.
Yeah, so it's a potential pitfall for a two-player game, but it's also important to remember that it's a player elimination game, so at some point it's going to come down to two players anyway.
Right.
You know, so I need to make sure that two-player works okay.
Right.
But hopefully with three or four players, you would still, there'd be some time for everybody to be taking some hits. And
plus,
you know,
remember that it's drafting, so you do want to reward people mm-hmm. drafting well.
That's true. Yeah. So. And so we played through. So she stomped me real good. And we talked about it. And then afterwards, you know, I shuffled all the cards and I dealt some out. And then we actually did draft mm-hmm. the second time. We didn't play a second game, but we did draft now that she understood how it all worked.
Right.
And it came out much more evenly balanced.
Makes sense.
So I think for testing, like, I was going to ignore the drafting because I just didn't want to have to think about it. I was focused on how it was going to play mechanically. But it turns out that the drafting is a really important part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna make any changes to the proto I have. I'm gonna go ahead and try it again.
Yeah.
Sometime. But just make sure we do the drafting.
Bring it to work sometime. Let's go.
Yeah, I should do that.
Give it a go. Mm-hmm. Do it this week, man.
Yeah, you might as well. I also went back to Card Game Simulator and was poking at that a little bit.
I saw some of your tweets about that. I like kind of the base thing you pulled together for it.
Yeah, I was just playing around.
It's not amazing or anything, but it's functional.
Yeah, I was playing around with it. I had a few hours this weekend when Christine was doing a baby shower, hosting a baby shower, and I had a couple hours to kill before I had to go back there and pick her up and help her clean up. So I was just poking around in Photoshop and mocked up a card design and liked it enough that I finished it later that evening.
Nice.
So
that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
Just did the one card?
Just the one card, yeah. Just to kind of get a flavor for how it would feel. Because I think, and I don't remember the last time we talked about, we play tested that once and it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
I had tons of ideas for it, man. I was like, you keep working on this game.
Yeah, it worked much better than I ever expected it to. Probably for a first proto, it's the most successful first proto I've ever made.
I think I remember us saying that when mm-hmm. we tried it, because I was like, this is really fun.
Yeah, and I think maybe I never got back to it because I was like, oh, well, there's, you know, nothing much to work on. you know? So anyway, so I come back to that. Now I'm toying again with the idea of putting that on GameCrafter because so I don't know, just messing around. I haven't really played any published stuff though lately. How about you?
Not much. I was going to mention a Kickstarter that I showed you before. So I backed this Kickstarter called Josiah Cards, and basically it's a little fighting game. But I mean, really what it comes down to is it's like, characters from the Bible and it's like memory card type things. And I'll be honest, the main reason backed it is because
it's a Bible fighting game.
It is, I mean, right. That is kind of funny, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Old Testament had lots of fighting in it.
Well, but, I guess so.
So, but anyways, yeah. So in the game is super simple. I did not get it for the game. And the game is kind of an add-on. The idea is there's like memory verses and characters, but
yeah.
The reason I got it was because it's called Josiah Cards. And one of the characters is King Josiah. And so like my kid's name is Josiah for anyone who doesn't know that. So I was like, oh, I can't not back this.
Yeah. It kinda
so happened. I reluctantly backed it, only because these were first time people and you get nervous, right? So they hit a couple stretch goals, which they had a really low goal, but they hit a couple stretch goals. So it was like good for them. And they slapped some stuff on right at the end. It felt like, and I thought, oh no.
Yeah.
It closed on January 22nd. I got the cards less than a month later.
Wow.
Not only were they so fast at getting this stuff out, like the cards I showed you are decent quality.
They have a nice linen finish on them.
Yeah. The artwork is fine. I mean, like, it's not crazy, but I mean, it's fine. It's better than a lot of games I've seen. And then in addition to that, they already had a storefront set up. So, like, I actually added a few. You could actually, if you had done the Kickstarter, you could go in at a discount. You could buy a few of the like specialty characters that like are only going to be available via that. So, and I was like, I'm going to support these people because man, like this is amazing how fast they were. So
that's cool.
Fastest turnaround ever by far. So
that's great.
So anyways, I haven't played anything much though. Just been working on junk. Been doing some tweeting and causing some problems. So that's going to bring us to our feature of the week.
So I was like cruising through my phone the other night and, looking at tweets cause I generally on the average day, I'll check Twitter once, you know, after work or something. And I'm cruising through there and I see a tweet from you and I realize it's got like more than 100 replies and I was like, nope, not even gonna, not moving on.
So,
so I missed something, huh?
Yeah. So I backed two games recently on Kickstarter and I'm not going to say where they are cause I'm not picking on these games cause not, it's fine. And I backed the games and I'm happy I backed the games and I can't wait to get the games. But I backed two games and, Kickstarter instituted this new thing where shipping is now separate, right?
Oh yeah.
So like when you look at a thing, it says.
We expected that though, didn't we?
Yeah, but it bothers me more than I thought it would.
Oh, okay.
And this is why. Because it says $20 for the game. And I'm like, oh, sweet, $20, that's a great deal. And I click it and it pops up and now my pledge is $25. I was like, what the heck?
Oh, just like automatically?
Well, yeah. I mean, like I could have changed it, but I mean, it basically adds the shipping to your address in there, to your last known address. It must be, I'm assuming, whatever you have programmed in there. So I was like, oh, so now it's $25. But see, at that point, I already made the decision I was going to back it, right? Yeah. So like, so you just back it. You know what I mean? But the other game, and this is what really rubbed me wrong. The other game had, let's say it had a base price of $10, right? And I'm making these numbers up, but it had a base price of $10 and on the thing, it was like $10 MSRP 14. So like you're getting a deal and I'm like, sweet, I'm getting a deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Like I like when Kickstarters do that. They don't have to do that by any means. I don't mind paying list price for the game. Right.
Yeah.
So I click on it. Shipping is $5. So now I'm paying $15 for the MSRP of $14.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to my local game store, I could buy it. And not have to, for 14, right?
Right.
So the idea of that doesn't annoy me as much as the fact that, like,
it's not,
it's the psychology of it, right?
Yeah. It's not disclosed to you.
Right. And so I just tweeted, anybody else have any negative feelings about the new way Kickstarter does shipping? And a lot of people had a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, responses were for, yes, for the backers saying, yeah, this is dumb. A couple people pointed out the creators still have an option. Creators could still say free shipping and just work that into the price.
So does that $5 you pay for shipping go toward the total goal?
Yes.
It does.
Yeah. So one of the opinions someone had was, I don't think it should go towards the total goal. Well, I have a real hard time with that because it's how much money you want.
Yeah.
I'm somebody who likes an accurate total of something, right?
Sure.
Think about, let's talk crazy. Think about exploding kittens, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say it was $5 shipping, but that the price was the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we shave back that $5 off there. How much less money does it look like they actually made than what they did make?
Yeah.
And not to mention, who knows that it's actually $5 shipping, right? Because you can say it's $5 shipping. It's not like we vet that later.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what you're shipping, it could be $2 shipping,
right? I mean,
and the rest of its profit.
Water Balloon Watchout was $2.86 shipping.
Yeah.
Plus the materials to ship it. So I think I budgeted $5 for shipping in the cost of that.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that I normally sell the game for $15.
Yeah.
And if you buy it in person, I sell it to you for $15. If you don't, I sell it to you with free shipping for $15. So like, I make a better deal if I sell it in person, which is fine. I'm totally cool with that. I mean, so anyways, so that kind of bothers me, right? Like, I feel like it's a trick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what's stupid is, I think, and I could be wrong, but my understanding was Kickstarter did this to protect the backers. Like, that was my understanding of it. Was the idea was like, these are hidden fees. You should see how much you're paying for shipping.
Oh, I see.
But now I feel like they did it to make it easier for creators to put a lower price in there. That's not true.
It's not true. Yeah. So that would mean that if you were doing that Water Balloon Washout to get a copy of that would have been $10.
$5 shipping. Yep.
Plus $5 shipping. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a little misleading.
It is.
Yeah.
And what gets me is like somebody had said, well, the first click is the most important. And I said, exactly. Right. Cause that's the psychology.
Well, sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Once I say I'm going to back this game and I click that button, probably going to back the game, even if it costs more with shipping. And that's really annoying. So one of the other things we talked about, and I'm curious to know your opinion on this. I mean, Matt Riddle actually brought up, think of it like retail. And I love Matt. He's a great guy, but he could not be more wrong about that. Kickstarter is not retail.
No, it's not. It's not,
you know, somebody described
it's
it
not
as
a pre-order,
right? Somebody described it as it's retail. Yeah. It's like layaway for 12 months. And then in the end, I might not get what I bought.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't happen very often, we'll be honest.
No, but it happens. It does happen, right.
Yeah.
It's not a pre-order. It's not an investment.
Right.
It's give somebody your money and cross your fingers that they give you something in return.
Right. So because Kickstarter has been very explicit about the fact that this is not retail.
Right.
There are no guarantees.
Right.
So that kind of annoys me.
Yeah, I can see that totally. Now,
here's what I'd be curious about. I wonder if Kickstarter takes money off that $5 of shipping. Mm-hmm. Does Kickstarter get their piece of that?
Oh, that's a good question. Do they take a cut from that shipping cost?
They've got to.
They
right?
must. Of course they do. Yeah, because if it's all still going to the total, then of course they do that.
Right. Because if it wasn't, why would I not charge $10 for the game, $10 in shipping for a $20 game?
Right.
And just tell people, listen, this is how we get around the system.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of informally. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, they must take it from that total. So from Kickstarter's point of view, they need to think about... Because not everything that gets backed on Kickstarter requires a product to be shipped, right?
Right.
You know, and I mean, theoretically, kind of one of the origins of Kickstarter, on my understanding, maybe somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but the origin of it was to help artists pay for art projects. And,
right.
and fund people doing interesting experimental things.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of the original goals of that. And that would mean that there's probably no product to be passed out. You're just supporting an artist.
Right. Or they're giving you some sort of reward.
Yeah. And
that could be digital.
Well, and that's kind of become... Indiegogo and Patreon have become those. And Kickstarter now has turned into buy a product before it's out.
Right.
Or help pay for production costs for this product.
Try to most of the time buy a product, sometimes get screwed.
Yeah. But not all the products that they end up selling, and they're not selling your product. Most of the products that you end up backing are going to be something physical, but a lot of times it's going to be a digital product, you know, a game or a music file or an ebook or something like that, in which case you don't have to worry about shipping in there. So, if you think about it comparatively like that, it would make sense to keep your shipping total and your production totals separate.
Right.
Hmm.
So the other thing that I think is interesting about this whole shebang here is, like, I feel like Kickstarter, when they do something like this, they forget that they need to be 100% backer focused. Anything, like, for creators, at least in my opinion, it's a privilege to be able to post something on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to cater to me for that.
Well, didn't they open it up to anybody now?
I don't know what that means.
Because the famous potato salad one, right?
Right.
It means you can run a Kickstarter for anything. It doesn't have to be approved by Kickstarter anymore, does it?
They still have an approval process.
They still, even still?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, I guess I did know that, because a bunch of people were tweeting about Bottom the Ninth was on hold
for
a day or something.
The rain delay. And they handled that really well, and then they added a card called Rain Delay to the game.
Right, and good for them. Good for them for rolling with that.
But clearly Kickstarter did not notify people of that, because I refuse to believe that Kirkman would not have noticed that, because he's pretty on top of his Kickstarter stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So...
Man, I don't know. So the questions about Kickstarter keep on coming, it certainly doesn't change my opinion at all that Kickstarter is a flawed system.
Right.
And not something that I'm eager to get involved with again.
No, I back very few games anymore, but I still do back games. I know you don't, you're not as
into
it
as I am. Because I'm not playing them.
Right.
Because I just don't have the time to play all the games that I've already bought.
For me, if I've played a game and I like it...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I played the prototype, I will back it. Like, Katarsky's game, Best Treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to back that because I played it, and it was fantastic, and I know my family will like it, so I'll back it, so I can get it faster than if I waited.
Yeah, because I know I'm not going to play the games, or I'm very unlikely to get around playing the games, but also secondarily because I've been burned too many times with things that take...
Right.
A year, twice as long or three times as long as I'm told that they're going to ship. There's a couple of games I still don't have that I bought a long time ago.
You don't have?
Yeah.
What? Do you remember off the top of your head?
I probably shouldn't say.
Yeah. So, yeah. And there are Kickstarters that I've backed, now that we think about it, that I can think of two that have been out for a while. And it's a letdown that we don't have them yet.
Yeah.
And it's not like the publisher sends updates that often, either publishers.
Come on, guys. Publishers, come on.
I mean, I don't need a weekly update from you.
No,
like, that's annoying to
me. But
monthly?
Monthly.
Or even every 3 weeks?
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
I think they get tired of not having new information.
Yeah, or at least, you don't have to have new information every time, but just tell me you're still out there, that you haven't forgotten about this.
Right.
That my money has not just disappeared.
Right.
You know, give me something. Give me something.
Right.
Just talk to me about the production process. You know what? Who was really good about that was Chevy. When he did Pull, he was really good about posting updates on a regular basis. And even when there was no news, he said, "Hey, guys, there's no news. Let me tell you what I'm talking or what I'm looking at right now."
Right. You know? Even when there was no news and it was his fault there was no news, he would say, "It's my fault there's no news, and I'm sorry."
I really appreciated that from him, and I wish that more...
Well, too many companies are afraid to be honest.
Oh, that's the thing.
Chevy doesn't care. He's got nothing to lose. He does what he wants.
And that's another problem with Kickstarter, is that too many times now it's a big company. It's practically a big corporation.
Right. Well,
it's not an individual.
Mayfair has their Cones of Dunshire thing on there again.
Yeah. Jeez, didn't that fail once already? Or did they pull it down?
I don't know how that happened, but they're putting out this new version of it, and it doesn't look like they're going to make it. It just annoys me.
Because it's dumb. Because it was a really funny joke in Parks and Rec.
Right.
I mean, it was a really funny joke in Parks and Rec in one episode. And then it was a little bit funnier in a second episode. But that's enough.
Because it's just a board game they play in the show, right?
It's a made-up dumb board game that one of the characters created. And the joke is that it's terrible.
Okay.
And no one wants to play it because it's stupid.
Okay.
And then the next season, it comes back up and it turns out some other hardcore nerds are just going nuts for it and they love it. And everyone else still thinks it's crazy.
I see.
And it's a joke. It's a joke. And the game is a joke. And so I'm not surprised that people are not backing it.
Right.
Because if they're backing it, they're backing a joke and saying, hey, guys, I think that's funny too.
Well, there are some people that are backing it for like $2,000.
I don't know.
Because they're doing like crazy big versions of it.
I do not understand that. That's insane.
Kickstarter, figure your crap out,
people. It's not a game. It's a joke.
Right.
Maybe it's actually a legit fun game, but
I would like only back a game for that much money if Chris Pratt came and played it with me.
Yeah, see,
and like made jokes and was funny and stuff.
The other joke about it, like
Andy came dressed as Star-Lord.
Well, yeah, all right, I'd back it then. But yes, like in the show, it's like part of why it's a terrible game is that it takes like 12 hours to play and it's not fun.
That sounds like most Mayfair games. Oh, but
well, that's a little extreme.
That is, but there are some Mayfair games that feel like they take 12 hours to play and are not fun.
So I don't. They're trying to sell a game that was advertised on national television as bad.
Right. That's a good point. You know, I didn't know about it, hilarious.
Why do they think that's a good idea? Why do they think that's a good? I mean, Parks and Rec is a great show, and I love it, and I miss it, and I'm sad that it's off the air now. But anyway, so yeah, Kickstarter. I don't know. I still love the kind of stuff that like Tagmeyer's doing. You know, his small compact projects. They're just, you know, within the scope that he can handle. They're done by the creator. They're you know, that I have nothing but respect and admiration for. Right. And for new publishers getting off the ground, for short run stuff, it makes sense. But I just, for big corporations like that, I don't get it. And of course, I'm only talking about tabletop gaming, right? Please do not apply any of my feelings and my opinions to any of the other product categories that are out there on Kickstarter, because I don't want to make any judgments about that.
We may not be experts about anything, right, but we at least pretend to be about tabletop
gaming. We at least have some things to say.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where we just left off. Jason just collapsed into a fit of coughing, so we paused to get some water. And I don't know where we left off. Basically, I was spouting some vitriol about Kickstarter.
So I think we can stop there.
Yeah, that's enough. Everybody knows my opinions about Kickstarter and that I am tortured and conflicted over it, and I'm still crossing my fingers every day that a publisher will buy one of my games and put up a Kickstarter for it. Because I don't know. I mean, I'm conflicted about the whole thing, and I know that makes me a hypocrite. I want to be honest about all of the feelings that I have about all this stuff.
Rob has lots of feelings.
I have lots of feelings. I'm also extra stressed out because I have Saloon Tycoon out to 3 publishers right now, and I'm in that sad.
And every single one of them would kickstart it.
Yes. And I'm in that, man, you're making a mess. What does that sound? We got popping there. Man, just even that much. It's crazy. And I'm in that kind of gray area here where I know that they have it, and I'm waiting for them to give me feedback on it. And I'm just terrified and nervous. But so it's kind of liberating knowing that it's out of my hands now.
Well, if one of them is Mayfair, you have my permission to cut the things I said about Mayfair earlier.
I'm not going to say who they are right now. So I'm
just kidding.
I'm sure that those publishers would prefer that I not say that.
Of course, I was just joking. Right. It was a chance to make fun of Mayfair.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm going to pitch a game. It's going to be splendid.
Oh, yeah. It's your turn. It is. Time to practice the pitch with Jason Slingerland. Hey, and you remember what we said before. After our conversation with Matt and Ben, we were going to try and do a little like quick like 30-second elevator hook for these things, right?
I remember right now.
Okay. This is part of our process that we need to try. So you can pitch your game, but let's try and figure out what that would be.
Sure, sure. And I've got some advice I need in the game, but okay. I actually came up with this game this afternoon. But I
great. So another in-depth exploration from Jason Slingerland.
No, because I wanted to come up with something really simple. Uh-huh. And I had a dream about a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Not even lying. I woke up and I realized I had this dream about this mechanic. And I was like, I have to use this mechanic. And I promptly forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And then, or 2 weeks ago.
I had a dream that I had to really pee really bad, but I couldn't get out of school. And I don't know why I was in school, because I'm 35 years old, but I was in like my old elementary school and I had to pee really bad and I couldn't find the bathroom. But I mean, there was a ladies room, but I can't go in the ladies room.
Right.
And then I woke up and I had to pee. Yeah. So that was my dream. What was your dream?
I don't remember. I just kept remembering there were 7 cards in a line, and they just kept moving down the line, and I was so stressed because if they get to the end of the line, they're gone.
Oh, man,
what am I going to do? It's going to be gone.
I'm scared.
That was really the dream I had. It was very frustrating. I was very concerned. So anyways, all right. So I was trying to think of a way to use this mechanic, and I thought of a way to kind of use it, not necessarily with 7 cards, but a way to use it. I came up with this idea for this game called The River Mighty, and it's the idea that... So the theme is still a little thin, but this is the theme I have right now. And it's not necessarily a good theme, but it's quirky, which is what I like. So you are these people, the players are these people who are living along this 1 mile stretch of a river. Okay. And this river is special because you're actually living in a different dimension, right?
A pan-dimensional river.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And this actually, that idea actually comes from D&D. The River Styx was one that would like travel through the different planes of existence.
Okay.
And this is not the River Styx, but this is a, so the idea is that at the start of the, you know, where the river is coming through, it's like, it comes from this other place. And then at the end, it goes out this huge waterfall and then goes into the abyss and it's gone forever. Right. Mm. So you're trying to live on the edge of this river and you're trying to collect things, right? And it's primarily a drafting set collection game. It's, the idea is that, cards are flowing down this river and the cards are items, right? And what you want to do in this game is, on your turn, you're going to have three options. You're going to be able to pick up a card and put it in your hand, pick up a card and send it down river, which means that it's going to go off the abyss and be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can play any number of cards in your hand in front of you as a set to score. By any number, you can play one card, right?
Hmm.
Every card. So there's right now, I think there's going to be 7 different items, 72 card deck, 7 different items or types of items, right? Like silverware is like say one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to get forks and spoons and stuff. They have each item or type of item has a base value to it, right?
Okay.
So when you play that to score it, you automatically get that base value. So if I have 3 pieces of silverware and they're each worth 2 points each, hey, I have 6 points, right?
Uh-huh.
But here's where it gets interesting. When those cards go off the waterfall and are gone forever, they go into a special discard pile. That's not actually a discard pile. That's a bad name for it. But they go into this pile, right? And if I play 3 pieces of silverware, I then get to pick that pile up, flip it over, sort through it until I find any silverware that's in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I lay that down next to mine, and there are multipliers on there that make mine worth more, right?
Okay.
That makes sense? So, like, say that silverware is normally worth 2, but for every card that's in the abyss, it's a +1 to the value of the silverware, to each one. So now, if there's 2 in the abyss, now each one of my silverware is now worth 4.
And that's at the end of the game?
No.
You can't? No.
Well, as soon as I play it.
As soon as you play your set down.
And once I play it, those cards in the abyss move to the discard. So let's say you and I are both collecting the same thing and we're watching these things go over the edge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I play mine, discard this stuff. Now your stuff's not worth as much.
Hmm.
So it's kind of like you're playing chicken with that too, because you don't necessarily know what other people are trying to collect, right? Does that make sense?
Okay.
That's basically the game. Like, it's that simple.
So on your turn, you're going to flip a card over from the deck and it goes into the river.
No.
No.
At all times, there's going to be the number of players +1 cards in the river. So, actually it doesn't even matter. There could always, let's say there's always 4 cards in the river, right?
Okay.
So as soon as I pick one up, they all shift and then a new one comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. yeah. So,
and so on my turn, I can take one of those 4 or I can play a set from my hand.
Right.
Okay. And then if I pick one of those up, everything slides down and a new one comes out. And if something goes off the end, then it goes into the abyss.
Right.
Okay. You are basically describing Morels.
Seriously?
Yeah. That's basically Morels.
Even with the discard thing, like cards get discarded.
It goes into the decay.
Uh-huh.
And you can have up to 4 cards in the decay. And if, at some point somebody can take the decay into their hand, or somebody can take, or if it fills up to 4 and nobody takes it, then it goes to the discard inside of the game. So your abyss idea is structured a little bit differently, but the rest of it's basically Morels. Wow. except with 4 players instead of 2.
Cause I've never played that game before.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me that you're describing that, cause it's basically that game and you're trying to play a set and you're playing them down and you can get multipliers with it.
Interesting.
So you designed a great game, Jason. It's a really good game. Let me tell you, we like it a lot.
All right.
I'm sorry to say that. I mean, I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but
right.
But that core structure there is pretty much.
So tell me how Morels works.
Okay. So there's a deck of cards, and the game ends when the deck is empty. Okay. And so, and the cards come out. And off the top of my head, I can't remember if I think there's six cards in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're face up. And on your turn, you can either take a card, the card at the end of the forest, or you can play a stick, and there are these little stick tokens, and it's not important how you get those. But you can take whatever card is at the end of the forest, or you can pay however many sticks you want to get something further up the line.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you take that, so you take one of those, or you can play a set down on the table for scoring. So at the end of your turn, everything shifts downward. So whatever's at the new thing at the end goes into the decay, and then another card, it basically replenishes out to whatever the total is, six or eight. I think it's six. And then the next player does the next thing. And so you're trying to, and every card is, there's three card types. Basically there's mushrooms, and there's a bunch of different types of mushrooms, and there are different quantities of each mushroom. They're worth different points. There are multipliers. So there's there's butter and there's cider, and a butter will give you, if you play a set with butter, I think it's a times two, score multiplier. If you play a set with cider, it's times three multiplier. Then there are baskets. And if you play a basket down, that means you can have more cards in your hand, before you have to discard or are full.
Right.
And then there are special mushrooms, which are the, what are they called? It's on the tip of my tongue. The destroying angel mushrooms. And if you have one of those in your hand, your hand size is cut in half until you can get rid of it or something.
Okay. See, I feel like that's pretty different from what I'm describing.
You think so?
Different enough. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but that gives me a framework to avoid.
Okay.
First of all, things don't go into the decay or the abyss, as I'm calling it.
Yeah.
Every turn. You have to send them there.
You have to send them there.
Yes.
Okay.
You can only have five cards in your hand at a time. And that's, I mean, that's pretty standard for most mm-hmm. games, but, 5 to 7, right? you cannot discard. Like, so if you get five cards in your hand,
mm-hmm.
you either have to play or you have to pick stuff up and chuck it.
Okay.
So
the river doesn't keep moving. It doesn't push stuff into the abyss.
That was how, when I originally thought of the concept of the game, that was my thought. But mm-hmm. then as I was working on the pitch, I felt like that, even though thematically that does make sense.
Yeah.
I liked the, so originally here's how it was. Mm-hmm. Here's what was my original idea. It was every turn. I started out with being extremely turn-based, right? So
mm-hmm.
on a turn, there would be X plus two cards available. So X being number of players.
Okay.
So, so six cards in a four-player game. On your turn, you can do one of two things. You can pick up a card and chuck it,
mm-hmm.
in which case you're basically holding your turnover. You can only do that once per turn. Or you can pick up a card and put it in your hand, and then your turn is over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So those are the two options. Now, at the end of the turn, anything that's left over automatically dumps into the waste or the abyss, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, So that was how it originally was. And at the end of your turn, in player order, you would get to play your cards if you wanted, but you did not have to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next turn, six more cards come out, and player one shifts to the left, and we rinse and repeat.
Okay.
So that was how I originally envisioned it, but I kind of liked the idea because it was a river that it was just constantly, you were just constantly doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Okay. So I guess I'm still not understanding. So you would put something into the abyss on purpose if you've got a good set in your hand that
right.
you want to play. So if I've got a knife, a fork, and two knives, a fork, and a spoon,
right?
I could throw one of those knives in the abyss on this turn, and then on my next turn put down.
You can't throw one of the cards from your hand. So So say I have two knives and a fork in my hand, right? So uh-huh. three pieces of silverware.
Yeah,
and those are going to be worth 1 point each. So that's 3 points. I could pick up the fourth one and then play them on the next turn. Now mm-hmm. it's worth 4 points. Or I could chuck it,
mm-hmm.
right? And now it's worth 6 points.
Because one in the abyss makes it worth...
One in the abyss, yeah, is adding plus one to every card you have.
Okay.
And so
when I play that set down, then I would take that knife back out of the abyss.
Right.
That, okay.
but you don't get to keep it. You basically take it from the abyss and mm-hmm. throw it out of the game.
Throw it out of the game. Okay. And then I have to keep that score immediately. So yes. It's not like I'm going to add it up at the end
correct.
Of the game.
It's like, score boom, it scored.
Scored immediately, and then my set goes away.
And right now, I'm just scoring it on paper. I mean, that'd be the yeah. easiest way to do it. Yeah. It's just like you'd write it down.
Okay.
See, I feel like that's not the same as what you described.
All right, yeah, now that I'm understanding a little bit better, that is, because I was assuming that everything just automatically flows into the abyss.
I would actually say there was like artwork for the river. It would like, there doesn't need to be, because there certainly doesn't need to be a board for this. But if the yeah. idea is like, there's like an eddy in the river, right? So like they all come into this pool in the river, and then you're clearing the pool out either by taking it or whipping it down to the thing.
Yeah. So you might, you might even retitle it then, instead of being the river, I don't know. You can kind of gin up some kind of fantastical setting or something. The right. the pool of lost things or something or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Because the river implies everything is going to be constantly moving forward.
Right.
So,
but what do you like anyway. Better? The idea of the flowing, where it's like, there's always options, or the idea that you have a turn and at the end of the turn, everything's gone and then it starts over again.
Well, so if, what if it goes around and no one pulls anything out of the pool? What if there's nothing in there that anybody wants to get rid of or anybody wants to draw?
Right. Well, in the normal version of the game, on your turn, you have three options, mm-hmm. throw something away, play your set, or take one.
Mm-hmm.
So I see what you mean. The idea of like being like, you could, yeah, I get you.
It's jammed up.
Right.
Call
it log jamming.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that you could even say that if it goes past two players, nobody does anything, then you wipe it out, throw it all in the abyss.
Right.
And replenish or something.
Right. But I mean, I was thinking, like, if it was not turn-based, it was just like, well, it's turn-based, but you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
the game is one big turn, basically.
Yeah.
That problem solves itself, because if nobody takes it, eventually somebody's going to take something or pitch something, because they're going to want new stuff out there.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So.
Yeah, yeah, do you have any thoughts on like how many different categories of stuff? You said 72 cards total.
I was thinking seven different categories.
Seven categories.
Originally I had 13, but I really want you to be fighting. Like, I want, when I throw something in the abyss, I want to know that there's a chance mm-hmm. that you could screw me over by playing first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that risk idea there, like, if I'm going to pitch this, you know, or I'm going to hold onto these cards until I see somebody else pitch two cards, and then I'm going to go for it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Another thought I toyed with would be each type of object when played, like, it would be like, if you play X of these objects, X happens, right? Like, so, for something super simple, it would be when you play one of these cards, one or more of these cards, you can throw away something from the abyss. Mm-hmm. Another one might be,
yeah,
you know.
Sure, you would need special stuff like that.
So yeah. That could totally be item based. Seven special powers based on the items gives mm-hmm. you another reason to want to play, you know,
mm-hmm.
Want to play cards. One could be that it allows you to yank something out of someone's hand, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
One could be, when you play this, immediately take something from the river and put it in the abyss. If it's the same, you score on that. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Getting that item balance could be tricky.
And the idea is there wouldn't be a flat one of every item. You know what I mean? It wouldn't yeah. be like 10 of every item and then right. two of something else. It would sure. be a mix.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, it's interesting.
So
it's interesting. I mean, I like simple card games like that.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was yeah. just trying to think of something simple.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
okay. Yeah. And now that I have a better understanding, it does sound different from Morales. I mean, it seems, I think maybe in the same family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. What do we got for Twitter questions or emails or something?
Oh, we got an email here from Dave Wilkinson, who we met at Unpub. He said, "Hey, guys, it was great meeting you at Unpub. Thanks, Jason, for the kind words about Time Cross. Hey, no problem. It was a fun game. It was really good to hear you guys enjoyed it. Rob, your latest pitch sounds fantastic." Love that word. Ooh, fantastic.
And he's talking about smithereens, I hope.
The idea of desperately dismantling your airship while fighting off other players sounds really interesting and exciting. I wonder if you turn it into a racing game where the goal of the game is to cross the finish line first without, of course, hitting the ground. It's interesting.
Yeah, you know, and I was toying with that originally, with not just tracking altitude, but position. And I decided against that because it was just one more thing to keep track of.
Right. He does suggest here the score graph that he used in Time Cross, which is like you were moving over while you're dying.
Yeah.
Would come to mind as an idea. The x-axis being the distance traveled, mm-hmm. and the y-axis, of course, being your height.
Mm-hmm.
You can have thrusters that give you horizontal movements on the board. The more thrusters you have, the faster you will fly to the right, but also the faster you plummet due to the weight, which mm-hmm. is totally true. Armed with heavy guns, you inflict more damage, but at the cost of dropping, just like you said. So it sounds very cool, and good luck. I hope you keep working on this one. You guys always tell Rob when you want him to work on something, because he's terrible at following through with that stuff. So
I am. It's true. I'm terribly scatterbrained about that kind of stuff.
What a jerk.
Yeah.
And then Rob, I believe, has an email here from someone.
Yeah, Nick Shaw. Nick Shaw sent this to us. He says, "Hi, Rob and Jace. Do you like Jace?
I don't know that we know each other that well, dude. Yeah. I don't know that we know each other that
It is
well.
Pretty presumptuous, Nick. He says, "Here's the email to chastise you for forgetting it was me who sent you the engine destruction pitch challenge." So, yeah, sorry about that, Nick. We said before we forgot who it was and couldn't for the life of us remember who proposed that idea. So
Yes. It was Nick Shaw. Everyone.
It was Nick Shaw. Hey.
Thanks for that.
Good news. I enjoyed listening to Rob Pitch's game so much, I forgive you. I'd be happy to play test it if you do end up prototyping it. It is very early stage prototype right now, so I'm not about to release that, but, you know, maybe someday. I actually decided to try designing a game using the same mechanic of engine destruction to see what I could come up with. And what I did come up with was actually quite similar to what you pitched. In summary, it was themed on Wacky Races, the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon, where each car has a number of contraption cards that could be used to speed you up, attack other players, or defend against attack. Sounds very similar to Smithereen cards. Yeah, I agree. I love
Wacky Races.
Wacky Races, man.
I wonder how much that would cost, man. I want to make a Wacky Races was my favorite show, and they rarely ever showed it.
Yeah,
like, every once in a while, it was just like this gem of a show.
It was a beautiful thing. It was beautiful. Me, Dastardly and Muttley are two of my most favorite characters from my childhood. Those guys are awesome. I mean, the rest of them, like the Captain Caveman guys and there was some pretty boy guy. I don't know. It doesn't even matter. Dastardly and Muttley, man. So he says, "I also had a couple thoughts about your segment on trading and how to circumvent the issue where no one wants to trade with you. If that happens to a player, you could give them a token which could be cashed in on a later turn to give them a better trade-in ratio with the bank." Yeah.
"I want to trade." "No." "Okay."
Yeah. "They could collect any number of these tokens if everyone else was continually refusing to trade with them, giving them better and better odds to trade with the bank instead. That would encourage the other players to actually trade with that player so they didn't get such an advantageous bank exchange rate. It may be open to abuse, though. What if a player deliberately asked for a trade, knowing no one else could trade, just to get a discount token? Not sure how to get around that." And he talks about some other stuff, but I think that is a fantastic idea.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, good stuff. So thank you, Nick.
One more here from Gnome School. Gnome School has commented before. It's a great episode again. I had some thoughts on it that I wanted to share with you. I really tried making this short, but I kind of failed. And he said, "Sorry for potential mistakes here too. English is not my first language." Okay, dude.
Uh-huh.
You don't ever have to apologize for typing to us in a language that's not your first language.
Yeah.
And this is why. Because most of us can't even type in our own language, let alone another language. So you are all good, dude.
It's all good. No worries.
I really like Jason's concept of a trading game where everybody has just one resource. Hey, like everybody else. He said, "First thought I had was if one player would want to, they could totally block that resource, even if they don't get other resources. In other words, they could ruin the game. and punish themselves too, but some people are just jerks. So he didn't say that. That last part was mine. So what if you have a game with a lot of different resources? At the start of the game, each player gets a different random one that he can produce each turn. As there are more resources than players, not all resources are available in the beginning. Players can use any resources, he says any exclamation point resources, to develop and produce other resources. So basically any of their base resources to make other ones. So if a player doesn't want to trade his wood with someone, he doesn't have to, but the other players probably would develop ways of producing wood without him.
Mm.
Meaning that all the main resource becomes less important in trading goods. Therefore, you are encouraged to make good offers so that other players may not feel like they have to develop the resource, which means that you can then monopolize it later in the game. That's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. As for smithereens, everything's coming up couch today with smithereens. Gosh. Let me tell you.
Nice.
I like it. My first impression was the same thing you mentioned yourself. That's it. That it's maybe a bad feeling to become weaker instead of stronger in the course of a game. On the other hand, it's also interesting because that's different than other games. I first thought you would pitch a deck building game here, where you would start with a big random deck of cards and then reducing that like a deck culling game.
Sure, sure.
To a pile that was smaller bit by bit. That would be interesting to draw a random deck that you don't know. Anyway, I personally think the game could work out even if the draft in the beginning even if you cut the draft in the beginning and just dealt a random chip to all players. You mentioned that it might feel a little unfair playing with something you had no control over. While I agree, I also see an advantage in that. I once read a documentary of the German Congress of Game Authors where it said a good game makes the loser believe he lost because of bad luck and the winner won because of good strategy. Mm-hmm. That is an awesome quote.
It is great.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, even in situation that where it's completely random. The winners tend to think they did something right and the others did something wrong. That's really frustrating in poker when somebody sucks at poker but
makes
bad decision and still wins.
Yeah, that's the worst.
So while it could be frustrating, it could also be kind of a relief for some players. It's not my fault the ship was a bunch of scrap. In the end, it probably is a question of what type of player you want to address. And of course, you're right in saying that it makes no sense to have an engine building game where you don't build the engine. So maybe all the above does not matter for this particular game. But it made me think of this topic.
And who is that from?
This is from Gnome School.
Gnome School.
Yeah. He's cool. a recent new builder.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Thank you guys for all your comments. We always appreciate those.
Yeah, I want to give another shout out to another builder, Adam. I think it's Rayberg. It's either Rayberg or Rayberg. Adam is one of the tabletop deathmatch finalists for this new year, and those episodes are airing right now. Adam's game Bruin USA is on Kickstarter right now. It's already funded, and so congratulations, Adam. And he is a builder. I met him actually at Gen Con last year, and it was good to meet him. And congratulations on your success. And if you guys like home brewing and good beer and good craft brews, looks like a fun game.
Nice.
He's done a smart thing with that, and he's using actual bottle caps as game pieces, which is which is pretty clever.
That is cool.
Yeah. So it looks like a fun game.
Sweet.
So do we have anything else for tonight?
I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you everybody for listening. As always, we really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg, and Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_design. Please like us on Facebook, and please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Don't forget about the bi-weekly video show with Jason, Chevy, and TC called Something From Nothing every other Sunday night. They talk about cool stuff or to cool people, but rarely both. I don't know. Well, usually both. And it's a good time, so check that out on Google and on the YouTubes and the Google Pluses and whatever that stuff is. Follow them on Twitter and watch the tweets and links. And I'm rambling now. Buy our games. Go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. There you can buy a copy of Water Balloon Washout, and you can find links to my games on the Game Crafter, which are the Rumple Bum Academy for bug-based baking, the Epic Monster Tea Party, and finish up
the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game.
Thank you. That's probably enough for tonight, so thanks a lot, guys.
Good night.
See ya.
Yeah.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Three or four biggest. I only have it in my right ear here.